championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazin. I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, Spotify, and anywhere you can find a podcast. Today we're going to be touching again on the analysts and what Texas is trying to do there. Touch on Brandon Jones and how detrimental his injury is in the short term and the long term. Get into Texas's spring practices as it's March, people. Starting to get into spring practices. Talk about what Texas needs out of the defense in the spring. Talk about the offense next week. Get your evals from the Under Armour camp in Dallas this past weekend. And then talk about the weekend visitors coming up this weekend. Joe, how you doing, man? How's the week been?
It's been good. It's staying warm as best I can, or cool. The weather has changed like twice in this past week. And just excited for LSU coming into town. Made that trip last year. They make the trip this year. And you know, it's always exciting when a top-ranked team in some polls, number two and most others, makes it to the dish.
Yeah, hopefully they bounce back after the UTSA loss. I mean, man, we're recording this on, what is it, the 28th? Yesterday was a terrible day. terrible day.
Very bad day for Texas sports overall.
Yeah. But we're going to have to do a baseball podcast one of these days. But right now, we just have a lot of football, a lot of recruiting to go over. So let's go ahead and start off with the analysts. Texas finally confirmed the hiring of their four football analysts as they look to ramp up the analyst program there. Kind of like what they did with the preferred walk-on program. But they just announced that they have former Kansas State offensive coordinator Andre Coleman, former North Carolina head coach Larry Fedora, as we talked about last show, former North Carolina quality control assistant Dylan Fedora, I believe the son of Larry, right?
Yes, definitely the son of Larry.
Okay, and then former Houston defensive back coach Paul Williams. So the question being here that we're trying to answer is, why is Texas doing this? What is the point of getting all these analysts? Joe, what do you think?
Yeah, we touched on this a lot when we went over Fedora the first time, Larry Fedora the first time. It's additional football minds in or out of your network to come, just another sounding board to bounce things off of. Is that the right term?
I don't know. Probably
something like that. You're also in two of these guys getting some experience in state and in the conference. If they ever needed to maybe make a promotion, something like that, you're getting two guys with Power 5 or very close to Power 5 coordinator experience at U of H. So just a lot of quality guys to have in your room and really not have to pay that much for, to help your program and to also help the coaches who are kind of getting, I'm not going to say rehab job, but another opportunity.
Right. I think there are three main things to take away from this. The first one being, while this is nice to have a bunch of football minds in one room, it also helps, as you said, for grooming your successor should your assistant coaches get hired elsewhere. It will likely happen. That's what Tom Herman said, right? He said he wants all of his assistant coaches to be sought after, because if that's happening, then they're doing a good job. So having these guys, like what Alabama did, right? When they have Lane Kiffin as an analyst, he turns into your offensive coordinator. You know, Larry Fedora is your analyst. Maybe he turns into your offensive coordinator at some point. Who knows? Who knows? But it's a healthy system that you are trying to provide for your team that helps groom successors for this job. I think the second one would probably be having those minds in there. It gives you a chance to scout more effectively, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's those minds aren't only looking at other teams. They're looking a little bit at your team as well. That's what, you know, unofficially David Beatty helped out with Texas for the Big 12 title game, although Tom Herman very much tried to downplay how important that was. If you have access to this type of thing, there's no fault or there's no reason to not use it, because it can really only help, and it only hurts if there's infighting, which, I mean, if you're an analyst infighting, what the heck are you doing anyway? Or, you know, that analyst.
There's a reason you got fired from last
job.
Yeah,
I mean, it'd have to be some like bad PR for this to really end up poorly on the football side, I feel like.
Right. You know, there's the self-scouting, There's the grooming for your successors. But the last thing that really, really helps out this program is the added perspective of all of these coaches. And we talked a lot about this from Larry Fedora's side. The same thing with Andre Coleman, who comes from the Bill Snyder type of offense. Having a Bill Snyder type offense at Texas, I mean, think about what he did with the players he did at Kansas State. Bring that to Texas. You know, what if that happens? It brings an added perspective. It brings possible improvements and a lot of creativity into the room. That's what you get. That's the main thing you're looking for when you bring a bunch of smart minds into one room is creativity and improvement. And that's what you really get out of the analyst room as we get into the spring ball. They're going to probably play a lot of role in scouting the tape from spring ball. But speaking of spring ball, we have Brandon Jones, who we just got confirmation yesterday from the University of Texas that he had surgery on his ankle for a high ankle sprain that really inhibited his ability over the last four games, was it? Four games?
I'm not sure how much time he missed, but there was definitely large portions of games that he was out. It wasn't always the ankle, but it was something that had, after a certain point in the year, it kind of lingered with him, definitely affected his play. And yeah, he definitely did miss some time with some ankle issues last year. So good that I guess that it's fixed. Right. And then Texas announced that they expect him to not only be out for spring, but to be able to go and do summer conditioning. But I think if there was any person in this secondary that you were, of course, it's not great to have him miss reps and require surgery. But if there was anybody in this secondary who you could possibly afford to have out of the picture, at least for a couple weeks, you know, not having to take reps, tackles, that type of thing, as much as it hurts not to practice, that might have been the guy that you're okay with, because he will be so important as basically one of the two returning starters on this Texas defense.
Right. I guess that's your answer to the how detrimental is this question is not very. I think you can look at it a few different ways, though, especially short-term and long-term. Short-term, yes, it's a good thing because you can afford to lose him for at least the spring, not for the rest of the year. You can't afford that. But for the spring, it's okay, because what that does is it allows for guys like DeMarvin Overshown, for BJ Foster, Caden Stearns. You have a whole host of other guys in that safety room who could get some reps, some very necessary reps with the ones against some very good wide receivers. It's bad because you need him to be your defensive leader. You need him out on the field, coaching up some of these guys, you know, being a field general and really starting to get an even better feel for this defense. Because, you know, last year he did well, but there's always room for improvement. And spring ball is one step, one big step you can make in your improvement. We saw that last year with Devin Duvernay. You can do that again here with Brandon Jones. So that's one thing that you're kind of missing out on in the short term is that improvement. But again, you're sacrificing that for the improvement overall of your depth, right?
Right. I mean, Jones is very, very likely, he kind of fits in as free safety. Could do some other stuff, but that's a lot of what he did this past year to allow Caden Stearns to really range as strong safety. What this, the thing that this allows you to do is, you know, Texas is either going to be running five or six defensive backs the majority of the year next year. Now for two of these spots, it becomes who's the best between Kenyatta Watson, Anthony Cook, Jalen Green, Deshaun Jameson, Kobe Boyce, all those guys. For safety, it becomes how do we get BJ Foster, DeMarvion Overshown, Caden Stearns, Brandon Jones, Josh Thompson, Deshaun Jameson, how do we get the best guys on the field out of those six? And then there's obviously some more guys in the mix there, but those are the main, you know, headliners, I'd say. How do we get those from those six, four, possibly even the best four or five on the field in the right spot? Without Brandon Jones, that allows, I mean, you don't have to divvy up reps to him. The three guys that you really have to figure out are not three guys, but three positions, nickel, Joker, and maybe one of the other safety spots. It's going to allow these guys to get a lot more reps as a result, and maybe and hopefully, if you're Texas, make the picture as to what your best defense looks like a lot clearer.
Right, and then long term, the issue as you know, obviously he's not improving as much as he could, not taking these reps. But long term, here's one thing I would just watch is. surgery. You know, it's a surgery. Mm-hmm. Be careful with the ankle going forward.
I think this is the surgery Zach Shackelford had. Remember, he had high ankle problems for much of his, I think for a lot of either his first or second season or second and third or something like that. And, you know, after he was able to, A, finally fix it, and B, go through an off season without, you know, rehabbing an injury, he became a pretty solid center and is going to be one of the main guys Texas looks to up front in 2019.
Right.
You don't want a guy to miss physical development, but he's a senior. He already has a lot of physical development as it stands. And, you know, he's going to be able to come back for summer ball. At least that's what Texas believes is the case. And that's where a lot of strength and conditioning work is also done, probably more so than this little period of winter in between both football seasons. So it's, I don't think long term it'll be anything too much to worry about. Obviously, you just have to monitor it like most injuries.
Right.
But I anticipate this will be a guy, you know, come to Texas social media team, starts posting summer workout videos and guys showing up. You'll see Brandon Jones out there probably going full go. And then, of course, if it ever comes to it, having to ask at media days, how is Brandon Jones? I bet you'll get a good, and that'll be it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, it's a surgery. Keep an eye on it. That's the only thing I think could be detrimental is, hey, you know, something goes wrong with the surgery. We've seen it before. It's not likely going to happen, just a thing to keep your eye on.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of the spring, it's spring practice. When does it start, Joe? It starts in about
the
2 11th. Weeks.
Yeah.
So we'll start off here by talking about the defense. What does Texas defense really need out of the spring practice? Joe, the entire defense, what do you think Texas needs? Like the most important thing.
The most important thing is to really see, I think first, who from your 2017 class, 2018 class, leftover 2016 class, who of the guys that have played a good amount of snaps are going to be out there to lead some of the more talented guys maybe from that 2018 and 2019 class. The big number everybody talks about is, you know, you're losing your two of your main linebackers, your three defensive linemen, both corners, and a safety. Now, you're replacing a lot, but the guys that were behind them on the depth chart, it's not like they're coming in having never played before. I think Texas probably would have wanted them to get a little bit more time, and that goes back to not blowing people out this year. But they still have time, you know, under their belt. And that's about all you can really ask for when you're trying to replace graduating seniors or maybe early entrants. It's not an ideal situation, but at least there's something there to start with, and especially talented guys like Anthony Cook, Jalen Green, DeMarvian Overshone, BJ Foster. There's definitely a lot of snaps there. It's just not the same amount of workload and proven effectiveness as some of the other guys. So if they can be proven effective, I guess that's the way to put it, become guys who are consistent, that's probably the biggest thing. It's finding who from the guys that have already had snaps can continue on an upward trajectory and utilize the experience they've had on the field already.
Right. I think you split my point kind of right in half. Texas needs to find leaders on this defense to help install the defense. Some of these guys, they've had some real snaps, some real play here, but there are some guys who are coming in, like Jalen Green, who haven't had any of that, right? So what you're looking for is some guys like what you had last year, Charles Omenihu, Brecken Hager, you had Anthony Wheeler, and Chris Boyd, guys who can help install the defense and really make it so that there's some sort of consistency out there, at least an understanding. This year, that's what you're looking for. You need to find those guys to help bring along the guys who haven't had that sort of an experience. That's what I'm going to be looking for, is who steps up as your leader, and how's the install of this defense going with guys, as you said, you know, the two new cornerbacks, the two new linebackers, the three new starting defensive linemen. Who's stepping up? How are they leading? How's the install going? You know, that's what Texas needs. They need a good install so that next year they can kind of pick up from where they left off. Now, breaking it down, what are you looking for in the linebacker situation? What does Texas need out of this linebacker situation out of spring practices?
I think you have a pretty known commodity in Joseph Osai. You know that you need, or you know that he's probably the most effective guy on the pass rush, or at least on the outside on your team. I think that's, you have to figure out how you can keep him on the field regardless of what the offense you might be going against, if he's part of your, not only just your best 11, but maybe like your best four or five. If he's a guy that other teams game plan around because of what he's able to do on the outside, that's not somebody you want coming off the field at all. And I know that DeMar Van Overshown and B.J. Foster are effective blitzers from limited time we got to see them last year, specifically Foster. But Osai, I mean, that's what he does. That's what you recruited him for. That's his role on the team, with the exception of a little bit of drop back as a B backer. I think you have to figure out how to keep him on the field as much as possible, even when you do get into third down sub packages and stuff like that, because especially on third down, you'll want him in there rushing the passer. And then I think for the middle linebacker spots, you have to figure out who
starts, who is playing, yeah, who's actually out
who
there.
Who starts, but also who can you trot out there and know that he may get attacked from time to time, but won't just get constantly picked on like what happened to a lot to Texas linebackers last year. I think if you can find the guy who, at least in the Big 12, won't get constantly picked on, I think that's what you really need to look for. And it doesn't really matter who it is.
Right. I think Jeffrey McCulloch is going to be a guy who they're going to try to trot out there at inside linebacker, bringing him along, because the B linebacker versus the inside linebacker, that's a difference. That's a different skill set right there that he's going to need to learn. That's a different position entirely that he's going to need to learn. So bringing him along, helping him figure it out, and then making sure that he's not a liability at the position. Then I think you need to figure out who's next to him. Caleb Johnson is out for right now as he's rehabbing his shoulder. And you have DeGabriel Floyd and Marcus Tillman in there. You also have Ayodele Edowe. So figuring out, of those three, four guys, who's the guy who's stepping up next to him? And you would think Caleb Johnson right now, but you're going to have to figure out a guy who's behind him or maybe even above him. And I think right now that might be my initial guess would be DeGabriel Floyd. We've talked about that. But you still need to make sure that he can live up to that billing. He can take control of the linebacker position and not be a liability. So who's starting? How is McCulloch doing in the inside linebacker position, and then keeping Joseph Osai on the field, figuring out how you do that, which shouldn't really be too difficult, but still keep figuring out how you do that against every different type of offense. That's going to be key, making sure that these guys understand their position as well as we talked about, the install for linebackers especially, because all these guys are brand new to the position. So the next position, another completely, you know, clean slate here with the cornerbacks. What do you think the cornerbacks really need out of the spring practice?
This is my number one concern for Texas next year.
Oh, yeah.
This is, I think, you know, the common idea is like there, you can find a good Big 12 wide receiver on any team. And that, I think that's very true. So you have to make sure that you have a cornerback that, although people enjoyed picking on him all the time, Chris Boyd was often charged with taking care of one side of the field by himself. He was pretty good at it. He wasn't great at it. He's probably going to be in the NFL as a result of that ability. But I think even for an athlete in a corner like him to have his struggles shows the quality of wide receiver in this conference and just what a lockdown corner is tasked to do. And not only that, you're going with, remember, some snaps, but not a lot of experience. Anthony Cook never probably played more than a quarter straight. Maybe except for the Maryland game. Kobe Boyce, Maryland, extended playing time whenever he got it, had his struggles. There were some times when he looked all right, looked like he knew what he was doing as a cover guy, but there are other times where he was just lost and, you know, he couldn't make up ground to get to where he needed to go. Jalen Green is very unknown as far as college coverage. He only got a few snaps, I think, in the Sugar Bowl, and that was as a result of Anthony Cook getting ejected. So this is the biggest concern for me for next year, just for the entire team. If you run a defense where you try and funnel everything up the middle, a lot of what your run defense has to do with is corners who you know can reputably play by themselves or with as little help as possible from the safeties, who can then go into the box and take care of things there. If that doesn't exist, then, you know, this defense is going to have to look out for everything rather than knowing that, you know, some of the team's tendencies can be taken away by a lockdown corner. And right now, there are no obvious choices. I mean, Anthony Cook is extremely talented, but like I said, he probably has, what, two games worth of coverage?
He still has a lot to learn.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, do you want to throw Kenyatta Watson out there? This is obviously a big question mark. Luckily for the cornerback room, they have some pretty good receivers to test their strength against, maybe some of the best in the conference, if not country. So the coaches will have a decently good idea, as long as, you know, best goes on best, who can hold up against, you know, Big 12 receivers.
Right. I do. I've talked about this over the show multiple times. I think that there is going to be possibly a step down from what you had last year, which was a step down from the year before, because of what you're losing. I mean, they have lost so much more this year than they lost last year. It's kind of crazy to look at and see all the red lines through each name from the depth chart last year. Cornerback is a big position right there. As you said, huge unknown. Huge. You don't know who's your lockdown cornerback. You don't know how reliable Green and Boyce are going to be. You don't know if, you know, they aren't reliable, how you're going to minimize their importance, because the linebacker position is also a huge question mark, and the nickelback position is also a huge question mark there as well. So you need to figure out how reliable these guys are. You need to get them reliable. You need to coach the hell out of them and make sure that you can figure out a good nickelback position, whether that is DeShawn Jameson or whether that is Josh Thompson, and figure out how to get these guys working against some of the better wide receivers in the country, or else Texas is going to have, like you said, a really tough year next year against teams like Oklahoma, who, yeah, they're going to, you know, maybe it's not Kyler Murray, but they're still going to have some really good wide receivers, some really good offensive linemen, and a pretty good quarterback in Jalen Hurts. So it's going to, you have to figure out who that guy is, who's your main guy, and then if you don't have one, coach the hell out of it. And make sure that by the end of spring practices, by the end of, you know, summer ball, by the end of August ball, you have a guy. Speaking of the defensive backs, the safety position. We already talked a little bit about it, but I think one of the things you need to get out of this spring practices is figuring out a way to incorporate DeMarvian Overshown into your defense. Because right now, it's sort of been like, okay, do we put him at linebacker? Do we put him at box safety? But if we put him at box safety, what do we do with BJ Foster? It's been a huge question mark. So I think one of the big things that you need out of this spring practice is to figure out, what is DeMarvian Overshown's position? What is his role on this team?
Yeah, 100%. I think it's pretty obvious Caden Stern's going to be strong safety both this year, next year, and possibly the year after that. Brandon Jones could probably be the free safety. He could be the nickel. BJ Foster could be free safety, could be the nickel. DeMarvian Overshown, he's probably either free safety or the joker. That's the thing, like I mentioned earlier, who's going to have to be on the bench for him if he plays as well as he is, you know, his potential has been built up to be, who's going to have to be on the bench as a result. He seems like a guy, based on how the coaches talk about him, based on, you know, any report, and kind of just based on watching him move, that Texas is going to have to make sure he's on the field. And that's even with how good BJ Foster was. BJ Foster at times looked like the best blitzer on the team last year, knew how to shake offensive linemen pretty easily, knew how to come down and just attack people. Do you want him to have to play going backwards at all? Something that, you know, he's a little bit more limited at, or at least has limited action in. This is the biggest challenge, because wherever Overshown ends up dictates a lot of other spots on the depth chart.
Right. I think it's going to call for a lot of creativity from the defensive staff. Something like, you know, I've seen on board say BJ Foster the nickelback, and you put DeMarvian Overshown at joker. That is a possibility that they could go with. It's sort of like the little Jordan Humphrey conundrum, right? You have two really, really good X's. Who do you use as X, and where do you put the other guy? Well, they figured that out pretty well, and now little Jordan Humphrey's on his way to the NFL. They're going to have to figure out pretty much the exact same thing, but on the other side of the ball with DeMarvian Overshown. And you just have so many riches that you have to figure out. You know, they always say in recruiting that they'll put the best six guys out on the field in the secondary. You know, there's so many guys out there. They're going to have to live up to their word and figure that out.
Right. And I think the reason that B.J. Foster can probably credibly play the nickel, instead of us talking about guys maybe like Deshaun Jameson or Josh Thompson for that spot, is that at least in this defense, it doesn't – yes, they ask a lot for coverage, but it's not – I wouldn't really call him like a cover nickel. He's not on the slot receiver, you know, manning up, staying with them step for step very often. The nickel in this defense is very much very often – at least how the defense was structured last season, he was a force player. I'm not sure if that's something that's going to continue because, you know, at times they're going to not want things to be forced inside. They're going to want stuff to get bounced outside and let all these guys track with their speed and athleticism. And that's where, you know, that's there will be plays available to be made for the nickel. It's just that there is so much asked of this position that it takes a lot. And I think having a step up in athleticism would be a good way to, you know, maybe start the conversation. But even then, Deshaun Jameson, you put at wide receiver because you decided you need more dynamism on the field. Josh Thompson is probably one of the fastest people on the team. And then we all know how athletic B.J. Foster is. This nickel spot is going to be very interesting to watch to see who can successfully manage it. Because I think, you know, even at for the mean last year, B.J. Locke managed the nickel spot. He wasn't great. He got burned sometimes, but he wasn't. I think he because he was tasked with so much, he was able to do well enough for others around him to make up for any, you know, play he might have missed in all of his assignments. So figuring out who's going to be able to do that credibly, play that, you know, basically kind of be a linebacker and a defensive back in one, not just a defensive back on a slot receiver. It's going to be a big challenge for Todd Orlando to prepare for this season.
Yeah, I think one of the more underrated guys in the run game last year was P.J. Locke, as you said. He's a guy who was an enforcer, and you couldn't really tell on TV looking at him, but without the pads, that dude looked like a linebacker playing a cornerback position, playing the nickelback position. He was jacked. It was crazy to see, you know, muscles that I didn't even know existed on that kid. So you get to figure out a guy who can, as you said, you know, be good in the pass coverage position, but also be able to come down and stop the run. That's where B.J. Foster could possibly outperform guys like Josh Thompson and Deshaun Jameson. Now, the next and last position we have to talk about is this defensive line, because again, clean slate. You lose Chris Nelson, you lose Brecken Hager, you lose Charles Omenihu. Probably the biggest one on that list of guys who are leaving is Charles Omenihu. That's going to be the biggest one you need to recover from. However, Texas has a lot of talent, like 8 guys that I can count who are pretty ready for the next level to step up, but you only have 3 spots. It's going to have to be a race to see who can fill these spots. It's a competition where you need to see who emerges from that group and then build from there.
Yeah, this is a spot where literally everybody, a redshirt freshman or older in the defensive line group, with the exception of Jacoby Jones, has played snaps at Texas.
Meaningful snaps.
Yeah.
And done well.
DeAndre Christmas-Giles, Jamari Chisholm, Gerald Wilbon, Taquan Graham, going down the list here, there are no sophomore defensive linemen. That's an interesting tidbit, save for Joseph Osai, but he's a linebacker. Anyway, Daniel Carson, Moro Ojomo, you know, these are all, with the exception of Carson, guys who got a little bit of playing time last year.
And Keandre Coburn, you missed.
Yeah, Keandre Coburn as well. These are all guys who have got playing time. So this one is a little bit, probably less stressful, I guess, for the coaches to have to try and figure out, especially when you look and, I mean, Taquan Graham played a lot of football last year. Marquez Bimage, before he got injured, played a lot of football. Even Gerald Wilbon, he was the backup nose, and he played a lot of football last year. So there are definitely a lot of more experienced options, but just not a lot of starts among this group. And I think of the 3 levels of the defense, this is the one where I kind of have the least concern. I feel like somebody's going to step up and be okay and be able to do the things in this defense on the defensive line. The only thing is, I'm not sure if there's going to be and this is exceedingly rare in college football, I don't think there's going to be a playmaker maybe from that 4-eye position like there, like Omenihu was last season. I think he might still get serviceable and above average play, but I don't know if you're going to get a guy who, like Omenihu, who had the season like he did playing in the spot he did.
Right. Probably the guy who would be most like that would be Taquan Graham or Marquez Bimage. But I completely agree. You're not getting another Charles Omenihu, just like you didn't get another Puna Ford. You're going to find another guy on that offensive line. And there's been buzz about a bunch of different guys. I mean, Jamari Chisholm, I know that there's excitement in the program about him. Obviously, Malcolm Roach probably will be your next irreplaceable guy. But it's gonna you're going to have to figure out who in that group is the best. And then figure out and build the depth from behind there. Make sure you have an understanding of, this is the rotation we have here. Here's how guys work in these different situations, and make sure that guys like Keionjay Coburn, Moro Ojimo, Daniel Carson, guys like that understand the system better now. And guys like Jamari Chisholm, Gerald Wilbon, Taquan Graham hold down the system. So that's what I need to see out of Texas in the spring practice, or that's what they need. And what I'm going to be looking at is just, hey, who's in the depth chart here? How do they look in the time we get to see them? What am I hearing about how they're progressing? But if you're Texas, that's what you need out of these guys. I think that does it for our team talk. Let's go ahead and talk a little bit recruiting. As we just got back, or not just, but we got back from the Under Armour camp in Dallas, and we will be going straight back for the opening in Dallas. But let's go ahead and talk about the Under Armour camp. Joe, to you, who were some of the most impressive people at that camp?
Somebody who really impressed for me was Tommy Brockermeyer, the 2021 offensive tackle from Fort Worth All Saints. He's just a guy that is built like a professional tackle, very, very good as far as his technique goes. I've watched his film right before I was able to go see him play, and I just had the realization, like, dang, playing football against Tommy Brockermeyer must be truly awful because of how often you get placed in the dirt. His highlight film is just minutes upon minutes of pancakes, and it's a very entertaining watch. And so I kind of feel for any opponent of Fort Worth All Saints who plays a right defensive end. Another guy that stood out to me was Branrad Wright.
Branrad?
Is that how you say it?
I think that's how you say it. Again,
Brainerd again, Wright.
Names, not the strong point of the show.
Yeah, Brainerd Wright. He's not a guy currently on Texas's radar right now. There's some questions about him as far as just how quick and how good his first step is. But in this situation where it's all one-on-ones and there are no pads, he was able to leverage his size very well, at least in the camp setting. But it was a camp setting. And see if I can think of one more who maybe wasn't a big guy. I know, obviously, Marvin Mims got an invite to the Under Armour game.
Right.
Haynes King looked great. I think he recently was re-ranked as the number one quarterback in Texas. I think either was that in the composite or 247's own rankings. Very good argument there with his athleticism. I mean, he's got unbelievable speed, and he throws a pretty solid ball, just needs to get his size up a little bit and find the right offense for him. He'll be a great one, and that's not to say that Texas should start recruiting them. I know that they're very satisfied with what they have with Hudson Card, obviously more than satisfied, but he's another guy that stood out. And I'm trying to rack my brain. Those are definitely, I mean, if those are guys that I can think of off the top of my head for me, those are guys who had a pretty solid day.
On the other side of the ball, you have Keaton Crawford, who did receive a Texas offer, what was it, last week or the week before?
Mm-hmm.
He was incredibly impressive. I think he might have been one of the best cornerbacks out there, and I was really upset that he didn't get his name called. It's probably just a name recognition thing at that point, because Keaton Crawford is a guy who I could see in multiple positions at Texas, whether that's cornerback, which he could play very well. I don't think he ever got beat at cornerback. Nickelback, which I think he more than could excel at. He has the body weight. He has the frame that could put on weight. He has a frame that could lose weight. You can do so much with Keaton Crawford that I was really impressed with just his ability on the field and his potential going forward. So he's a guy I really want to keep an eye on going forward. And again, you said Marvin Mims. Marvin Mims is a guy who, you know, I don't know why Texas isn't not looking at him. I guess they like what they see out of J.J. Hester, and they like what they see out of Quentin Johnson, but I'm really a big fan of Marvin Mims at the Z position. I think him getting that offer to go to the Under Armour game, I think it's well-deserved. That dude was burning guys. He understands positioning on the field. His route running is almost impeccable. I'm a huge fan of him and his, you know, his ability and polish on the field. So I really was impressed with him. Ty Jordan, another guy. Talk about incredibly twitchy. Mm-hmm. Another Texas target for the running back position could give Texas a different edge to their offense.
It's all about multiplicity with the modern game and putting guys. And it's kind of like in the video game. You'd put a guy in motion to see if they were in man or zone. And sometimes it is that simple. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes you can see who's lined up across from you. And I don't think there are a lot of high school defenses right now who has someone who can match up with the quickness of Ty Jordan.
At the cornerback position or at the linebacker position, nickelback position, I mean, obviously no defensive linemen. Well, maybe. I don't know. Prince Dorber looked pretty good. But, yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, Ty Jordan is so incredibly athletic, so very, very agile. I don't know what his shuttle time was, but I imagine it was under four seconds, because the dude, while 5'7", has that special something that you need to have if you're going to be short and go to the next level. So the last guy that really impressed me was Shamar Turner on the defensive line. He's impressive to me because he kind of came out of nowhere. He did go to the Texas Junior Days last week, but beyond that, I don't think he's really had his name blow up very often. The only big offers he has are Oklahoma State and Baylor. But what I saw him do to the guys he was lined up against at 6'4", 260, 250, the dude moves very violently. He has a huge burst. And I think Texas right now is just waiting to see him put his hand in the dirt more, because he played linebacker for DeSoto most of the year last year. So it's sort of a Nana Asafa Mensah situation, where I think later on he's going to be a name to know. But right now, teams are just in wait-and-see mode to see, okay, can you make the switch to the next position? And I think he can, because the dude was burning guys left and right on the offensive line, no matter who he went up against. He even did pretty well against Savion Byrd, who is a guy who has offers from Bama and Georgia and LSU, I believe. So he's a guy to keep an eye on. But Joe, what do you think about some of the Texas' main targets? Like, for instance, Jake Majors, how would you say he did in this camp?
I think he did all right. I think he performed well. It wasn't so much the thing about Jake Majors from this camp wasn't so much what he did as much as what he said. When he talked with reporters before the main part of the camp really got going, he told everybody he was 6'3", 290. And I think a lot of people had kind of had this understanding or this thought that he was 6'4", and probably in like the 275 range, at least when he committed in January. To hear he's 6'3", 290, I mean, that's not the end of the world. I mean, obviously, there's some good 6'3 offensive linemen on Texas's football team. But I think that definitely solidifies him as an interior player at the next level, if it wasn't already clear before. And then the 290, he carries it extremely well. It doesn't it doesn't look like it's, you know, more weight than he should have at all or anything like that. It's a well distributed weight, and it lends itself to, you know, building upon once Nancy McKnight can get him in the strength and conditioning program. So that was the one thing. I know Texas prefers length from all of its offensive linemen, but he's a guy that he's built. He's already pretty technical as it is right now compared to other high school seniors, and even compared to some other guys in his class already. And I don't think it's any reason for concern. It's just a little bit different than what everybody might have expected to hear.
Right. I'll be honest. With Jake Majors, I did like his frame. I think one thing that Herb Hand is looking for in these offensive linemen, and I think he's actually gone on record in saying this, is that he doesn't care, you know, how they look in these camp circuits, and he's not really making a big fuss out of how their tape looks. He wants to see Do they have the correct body type, the frame that he's looking for? Do they have the correct mentality that he's looking for? And do they understand enough for the next level? Can they learn at the next level? And I think from what I saw out of Jake Majors, that is all there. And it's very much there. It's there in spades. What I was a bit disappointed in is I thought I'd see a lot more polish and understanding of the position at this point in his game. Now, that's not to say that he won't get better and he can't get better at that, but there are certain things like going up against Brannard Wright where he got bull rushed. You're not supposed to do that, but instead of starting to set his base, he's playing hand games and he gets beat that way. You know, he looks like he needs to get more strength on him. When he does go against a guy who is faster than him, he allows an easy inside release. There are things that I saw that were a little, you know, hey, that's not what you want to see out of a Texas commit. But at this point, I'll take Herb Hand at his word because of what he has done with guys like Samuel Cosmi, who people were like, why is Texas taking Samuel Cosmi? Or Christian Jones, who, again, why is Texas taking Christian Jones? It's the body type, it's the mentality, and what you can mold them into that is important to Herb Hand. So I think that's what you get out of Jake Majors here. And I'm sure he'll get better as the season goes on. He's also an offensive tackle playing inside interior position at this camp where the offensive linemen are already disadvantaged. The next guy for Texas that would be on Texas' radar would be Prince Dorba. Joe, I mean, I feel like this is a guy who we missed on the impressive list, right?
Definitely. Even, you know, he said his current weight right now is 210 pounds after playing basketball for Highland Park. But even so, he looked really good. He's probably the quickest defensive lineman that was out there.
Oh, yeah.
A little easier to do at 210 pounds compared to some of the, you know, 290 guys, maybe 270 guys that he's going up against. But he showed why he's effective, and he was able to do it a little bit more from a spot he's more comfortable with. He plays as a defensive end in a three-down front for Highland Park. He was able to bump outside and just use that quickness, kind of, you know, Euro-step some offensive linemen and make a good name for himself. 210 pounds was a little concerning, especially because there had been some word that he was up into, like, the 225 range. But, you know, somebody that you can still grow as a B-backer, maybe not a defensive end.
Yeah, he's definitely a B-backer at the next level, and Texas has definitely let him know that he's a B-backer. So I want to see his ability to drop back in coverage. But the dude is quick going forward, and that's what he's known for, is being a pass rusher, and he has deadly quick speed. Now, I was asked to compare him between Joseph Osai, and I would say, you know, they look similar on paper, but Joseph Osai is a lot stronger, a lot longer. Prince Dorba relies a lot more on his speed and quickness. So that's what you're going to get between those two guys, the B position, B backer position, if Prince Dorba does decide to go to Texas, which, you know, funnily enough, he said that, "I believe Texas is probably leading the way right now." This is a quote. "They've been pushing me hard and recruiting me harder than any other school." So right now, Texas is in a pretty good position for one of their priority targets, Prince Dorba. Another guy who is really on Texas's radar is Brennan Scott, the inside line. Oh, I guess he's outside linebacker technically, but he looks more like an inside linebacker out there. Joe, did you get a chance to see him?
I didn't get to see much of him.
I got to watch a few reps of him, and from what I saw, the critique on him was that when it comes to dropping back in pass coverage, he has a little bit of trouble. That's what I saw. I definitely saw that. He got lost a few times in pass coverage. He's not quick enough at times for some of the more speedy running backs out of the backfield, covering them one-on-one. But if you turn on the tape for Brennan Scott, what you'll see is a guy who is viciously violent. Vicious. The guy, he hits like a freaking Mack truck, and that's not something he's able to do in these camp settings. Instead of, you know, trying to cover the guy one-on-one, what he usually does is he takes them out by knocking them on their ass. So that's not something he can do in this setting. That's what but he can do with pads on. So I do think that Brandon Scott would probably look better with pads on, but not impressive in the camp setting. A guy who was impressive in the camp setting, though, was Ryan Watts. a cornerback out of Little Elm, 6'2.5". I believe he told me he was 186 pounds. And he looks like the prototypical cornerback that you see Texas give an offer to.
Yeah, I wasn't able to see much of him either. I think that's when I was looking at the Brockermeyer and all the big guys going. But yeah, he's definitely impressive as an athlete, just looking at him and seeing him go through some of the warm-up stuff.
Yeah, he's long. He's got long arms, long legs. He strides well. He's quick. With a 4.6 40, he's able to stay in the hip pocket of a lot of these wide receivers. The one thing I would critique him on is he's got to do some work with his feet, and he has to be able to be more flexible with his hips. Other than that, I think he is maybe one of the better cornerbacks in this crop of cornerbacks this year in the state. You know, obviously behind Jalen Jones, which Texas missed out on. But if you have to go beyond him, Ryan Watts is right there. So I'm a big fan of Ryan Watts coming out this weekend. Speaking of weekends, this is a terrible, terrible...
That's good. It's good.
It's a terrible transition. But speaking of weekends, let's talk about the weekend visitors this weekend. There is Jalen Kimber, who is a cornerback for the 2020 class, another one that Texas is looking at. But I think the more important visitor out of this weekend, which I guess there are two, is Parker Braun out of Georgia Tech, the grad transfer offensive guard. And I did a little write-up on what I think of Parker Braun, but I'll get to that later. Joe, what do you think of Parker?
I think just knowing where he comes from, the spread option, spread triple option at Georgia Tech, you know, you got a mean dude there to play on the line of scrimmage. You know, you have a guy who's not afraid to go forward each time and take the best that a defensive lineman gives to him or to cut block you. I think that it's definitely another guy looking to make a business decision, not trying to have to win over a new staff and maybe completely learn a new position or a new way to play a position under a new coach that maybe he doesn't believe can get him to the next level. And so he's searching for a coach to try and get him to the next level. And Herb Hand and Tom Herman are definitely part of the that equation. I think he'd make things a lot easier on Herb Hand, because as we know, figuring out the two guard spots seems to be the offensive line, jumping a little bit ahead, but plays into the Braun conversation. Guard is one of the bigger questions, both of them, for this team. And so if you get a guy like Parker Braun, who has a lot of experience, FBS experience, Power 5, probably, you know, one of the better, not this past year, but during his career, one of the better top-to-bottom conferences in Power 5, getting him in there makes things a little bit easier, helps your season in 2019, and can give you a little bit of a stopgap until, you know, some of the younger guys like the Rafidi Grimais or anybody like that are ready to take it over themselves.
Right. And scouting-wise, I think the guy is 6'3", 280. That's the 280 is a little bit troublesome. What he lacks in that size, he makes up for in having an incredibly quick step. The dude is very fast. He's very mobile outside of the pocket. He's able to do a lot getting to the next level. And in an offense that uses pulling guards quite often, having a guy like him, and even, I mean, it's not hard to put weight on a guy, but having a guy that's as quick as him would be a huge bonus. But if you don't trust my scouting on this guy, trust the accolades he's gotten. He was a three-year starter at Georgia Tech, one of Paul Johnson, who is an offensive lineman coach, one of his best offensive linemen in his 11-season tenure. He was the All-ACC second team in 2017 and All-ACC first team last year. So there is a lot this guy has done. There is a lot he has proven, but he needs, as you said, to go to another program to prove, hey, I can do this in a more traditional offense. And I think he can. You're just going to have to watch out for, hey, how does he do in pass protection at this different offense? But I think it would be a pretty easy transition for the guy who has done, you know, incredible in most everything he has taken up at this point. So I think he is maybe one of the more important acquisitions Texas could get in this offseason and for the 2019 class. I think that is going to do it for us here. Sorry for the shorter show, y'all, but we'll make up for it later, I guess. This has been your 4th and 5. I've been your host, Will Baser. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER or on thefootballbrainiacs.com. Texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com, that is. And Joe Cook, where can we find you, bud?
You can find me on Inside Texas, or you can find me on Twitter at JosephCook89.
Or you guys can find us on our other shows on the Hornscast channel. So Hornscast channel at iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, Spotify. Anywhere you guys can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. On that note, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all next week. Hook 'em.